Hello, my name is Tom Arms, and this is Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. Once a week, I get together with my old friend Lockwood Phillips to discuss world affairs. I'm in London, he's in North Carolina. This week, we're talking about Trump Jr.'s emails, and of course, the rule of law, and whether or not it's being too politicized in both Britain and America. I hope you enjoy listening in on our conversation.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world. This afternoon's program, of course, has been pre-recorded to accommodate our foreign correspondent, foreign editor, and actually, in many regards, you would argue even possibly host of this program, and that, of course, being Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon from London. Again, as always, just to remind you, London is five hours ahead of us. Not 5 years, I almost said that, but they're far, far behind us, as a matter of fact, but 5 hours ahead of us on the clock, and so we've accommodated our hosts, our foreign editors' schedule to pre-record this program. And of course, as always, to remind you, we can always look for his broadcast every Friday afternoon at Look Ahead News, Look Ahead Radio, every Friday afternoon on this talk station, and then other stations around the world and online at lookaheadnews.com. Tomorrow's news today. Joining us, of course, Tom Arms of Look Ahead News and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, good evening to you, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Lockwood. I would never think of taking away from you the mantle of host. And you're right, we are ahead of you, 500 years or so, yes.
Well, we'll have to debate that here a little later on in the program. Before we even get into that, curious as to the climate there in London and where you're located, what's the weather like?
Well, it's turned wet and chilly. Although the sun's coming out again, it has been quite hot. But the rain finally came. We had a lovely time this past weekend. We had a wedding in the West Country. And it was beautiful weather, beautiful bride, beautiful people, beautiful food, and it lasted all weekend.
Is that normal for weddings in the United Kingdom? Are those big events? And are weddings a popular?
Oh yes.
Okay. All right. It's one of those. Yeah, things.
So this was straight out of Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Okay. Yes. All right. That's interesting. You picked that movie. Let's talk about some issues here. And I want to start off with one story very quickly. We won't get into the details of it, but rather just for background for the audience benefit, there's a story associated with a child, 11-month-old child, in the United Kingdom, and I'm not sure of the city. Is it London, Tom, or
I'm not certain. I just know it. It's a Charlie Guard.
The Charlie Guard, yes.
Charlie Guard story, yes.
Yes, and this is 11-month-old child who has a questionable, if not totally inoperable and uncorrectable genetic disease, and there's a chance that the child will be allowed to die for all intents and purposes. And of course, the parents are contesting that and are hoping that they can retain possession of the child for all intents and purposes and fly him to the United States or possibly to the Vatican Hospital in Italy for purposes of trying to heal the child. That story is being covered here in the States and, of course, got play when President Trump mentioned the child in his speech in Poland. Tom, what is that story getting a lot of coverage there in the United Kingdom?
Oh, absolutely. Everyone, it's a very sad story, and everyone feels for the parents. Mm-hmm. And you may have an opinion as to whether or not the plug should be pulled on the basis of the fact that the child has absolutely no quality of life. He will grow up deaf, dumb, mm-hmm. almost in a vegetative state. That's assuming he survives. But on the other hand, if I were the parents, would I not be fighting
every last inch of the way to keep him alive? Yes, I would. And I think sometimes that's why it's important that you have courts that can apparently times have to play God,
right,
to make these decisions. Because, you know, or should it be left to the parents? There is no right or wrong in this. I've often said that quite often choices come down to between bad and worse. Mm-hmm. And this is definitely one of those cases.
Well, I just wondered if it was getting played. We don't want to get into the details, but it's an important story, a major story. Well, since I did bring up the president's speech, I'm curious, now that a week has passed, what has been the reviews of President Trump's visit to Poland and then, of course, to Germany? What was the review of his speech in Poland? We've had some real extremes here in the States. One group are demeaning the speech, calling it actually racist and xenophobic, and others claiming, well, this speech resonates for a variety of reasons. One, his attention and focus on the issue of God and Christianity. And of course, they're also praising the speech, similar to that of President Reagan's speech in Berlin on tear down this wall. What is the review there? What have been the reviews of the president's speech in the United Kingdom and in Europe?
The divisions in the United States are mirrored here in Europe.
Wow.
There are people who will say that he said exactly the right thing. He's fighting for Christian stroke Western civilization. They tend to be on the conservative side of the political spectrum. And there are those who are saying that he is racist. He's trying to divide Europe. He's trying to divide the world into different camps. He is not doing what a statesman should be doing, which is trying to unite people, but rather trying to divide them and create tensions that don't exist or exacerbate tensions that do. So I think it really depends on where you are in the political divide.
Now, what about leaders? For example, President Macron from France or Theresa May. What have they had any remarks? I've not seen any remarks, but I haven't been researching.
I haven't heard anything. I don't think they've made actual remarks, but it's pretty clear from talking to their officials that was no coincidence that he chose Poland. Poland, along with a number of other East European countries, is extremely right-wing, populist, nationalist governments at the moment, very similar to the views of President Trump and the Trump administration. Whereas the views of countries like the Netherlands and France and Germany and liberal and open, more traditional liberal, and they are very much opposed to a lot of Trump's foreign policy.
But I'm also curious insofar as the issue, and this we'll get into this topic a little later on in the program, the issue, for example, of refugees, the concerns for security, and what have you. Poland hasn't struck me as a country that's been impacted, and maybe I'm wrong, by the refugee issue, but the aspect also that Poland is very, very concerned about their relations with Russia. And it strikes me that maybe the president was sharing with not only the Poles, but the rest of Europe, his support of Western culture.
Well, it depends on how you define, is Russia part of Western culture, or was he talking about Western culture as opposed to Islamic culture and maybe Chinese culture? There is a question. I know he criticized Russia, and he criticized Russia about its actions in Syria and Ukraine. Is Russia part of Europe? Well, it's always been that sort of. It's always been part of and yet separate from. So I think that, and also, you know, you can't say that Macron and Merkel were entirely opposed to everything he said in the speech. I mean, there are parts of the speech which they approved of. I should think they approved of his more hardline position on Russia. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they approved of his position on basically talking about saving Western civilization, because that is probably viewed by the Arabs as an attack on them.
I just wonder how this resonates with the general population, particularly in...
It divides them. It divides them. It does not unite them. It divides them.
Interesting. Tom Arms, of course, of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. Viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com's expanded world analysis for the week beginning the 17th of July. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. Trump's budget comes under congressional scrutiny next week, especially from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, who is skeptical about the president's plans to slash State Department spending by nearly 30%. The Senate Finance Committee will also be examining the administration's tax reform proposals. Sino-American trade is under the spotlight on Wednesday with a meeting of the U.S.-China Comprehensive Economic Dialogue. Trade issues between the economic giants have been up and down since the inauguration of Donald Trump. Russian-American relations are on a definite downward slope with tit-for-tat sanctions and diplomatic expulsions. On Monday, U.S. Secretary of State for Political Affairs Thomas Shannon meets counterpart Sergei Ryabkov to try and iron out the differences. Also on Monday, Brazilian Agricultural Minister Baleiro Maggi is in Washington for talks with his U.S. counterpart Sonny Perdue following Washington's block on suspect Brazilian beef imports. Brazil is the world's second largest beef producer. Brexit talks between the UK's David Davis and the EU's Michel Barnier resume on Monday in Brussels. The two sides have encountered difficulties at the first hurdle. The rights of EU nationals in the UK post-Brexit world and the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice. In Egypt, the Cairo Criminal Court on Saturday is expected to rule on the death sentences handed down to 31 people accused of the assassination of former Prosecutor General Hisham Barakat. The Egyptian government accused the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas of being behind the attack. Friday is the final day in the trial of former Thai Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawatra. She was ousted by the military in 2014 after being accused of negligence in a controversial rice scheme scandal. If convicted, the former premier faces up to 10 years in prison. India, the world's largest democracy, stages presidential elections on Monday, with the results announced on Wednesday. The winner will succeed 81-year-old Pranab Mukherjee. The president's role is largely ceremonial, with executive powers vested in the prime minister. Royal birthdays are being celebrated at almost opposite ends of the age spectrum on Wednesday. Britain's Prince George of Cambridge and future constitutional monarch will be celebrating his fourth birthday. While in Dubai, it is the turn of the absolute monarch of Dubai, Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, who turns 68 on Wednesday. And that was next week's news today, so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And as always, to remind you, tomorrow's news today at LookAheadNews.com. No charge, just log in, sign up, and be a regular reader of his missives, his blogs, and information. Very informative. I'm looking forward to getting some details about what to look forward in the week ahead. But first, we want to continue our conversation with Tom on the recent visit by President Trump. Of course, this is, for the most part, because we're hearing it here at the talk station, first and foremost, I'm focused on the U.S. relations with the U.K. and Europe and the world at large. you have a note here that Trump visit to Paris, and you ask a question, why? What exactly is your thoughts on this, Tom?
Why did Macron invite him to Paris? I mean, he's going to Paris for the Bastille Day celebrations. That's the equivalent of the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. So it's a big event, and he's going as the guest of honor of the president of France. Now, why did Macron want Trump to come? Is it because he thinks Trump is a really nice guy? No.
No?
No, I don't think that's it.
I'm surprised. I'm surprised. He's a wonderful man. But continue on.
I know you think that. No, but I don't think Macron thinks that. I mean, you just have to go back to that white knuckle handshake and a lot of the things Macron has said. No, Macron, there's several reasons. One, he wants to work on him on the issue of climate change some more, tete-a-tete, face-to-face. And the other is that he wants to be able to have his voters compare and contrast him with Trump. He has a big majority. He has lots of political support. The country is united behind him. And so he wants to invite the leader of the free world, who's basically fighting for his political life at the moment, or is seen to be, perceived to be.
I appreciate
it's a bit of comparing and contrasting. The next reason is he wants to project himself to Trump and American officials as the go-to man in Europe. You want anything done, Americans, come to me. I'm your new man. It's no longer the British.
And by the way,
it's no longer the Germans.
Okay,
it's now Emmanuel Macron, the man who had a record-breaking poll.
Now, that's very interesting. You're telling us something that I think is very important to understand. And you're saying that he is looking to become the leader of Europe and the European Union. And of course, France has always been somewhat of a puzzle, at least in my opinion, as to where they are, if it's a country with leadership. Now, I'm curious, Chancellor Merkel, is she a feeling that she's being pushed aside? What is her reaction to this? Do you have any knowledge of that?
She doesn't feel as if she's being pushed aside. She's been in power for, I think, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wants to share it. She doesn't want, she's been working flat out trying to keep the European Union held together over the past 5 or 6 years with Brexit, Greek financial crises, you know, the banking crisis, the Eurozone crisis, all that has been on her doorstep. The French haven't been able to do a thing to help her because they've been part of the crisis.
Very interesting.
They've been dragged under. The only ones who were keeping their head above water were Germany. And to be honest, France is a long way from being out of the woods. It's only just started trying to. They've just announced huge, I think, $315 billion cut in public spending to try and straighten out their economy so that they can stand tall in Europe.
You know, that's going to be tough because the French, of course, have been promoting the issue of a 30-hour work week. It's a highly socialist economy. This is going to be tough on Emmanuel Macron, the president.
That was the previous government.
Yes, but this,
he's not in favor of that.
I know, and this is going. It strikes me that he is working right now to maintain his momentum, which I credit that. I politically can see the value in this. All right, you mentioned something a few moments ago, and we've got a few minutes before the next break. Let's talk about the perception of Donald Trump and being in trouble. You mentioned that a moment ago, and of course, the story about his son Donald Jr. Is that getting play in the UK there, Tom? And again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio with us. Is this topic a big news item there, Tom?
Absolutely. Huge. Absolutely. Lead item in the news. The BBC correspondent did he did an analysis on the website, a chap called Anthony Zerker. And it started off, talks like collusion, walks like collusion. It must be, no, maybe. Who knows with Trump?
Well, here's the question for you, Tom. Has there been any discussion or any news coverage about apparently Ukrainian efforts to assist then candidate Hillary Clinton in her campaign, which is, by the way, now breaking in the United States?
Haven't seen anything about that, but it probably will come across. Haven't seen much about that at all. Well, I haven't seen anything about that.
Okay, the other aspect of this, and of course, has to do with the comparison of President Trump's speech and criticisms of Russia, and now, of course, this issue of, as you just mentioned a moment ago, the perception of possible collusion. Is that how are the folks in the UK and the Europe balancing those two experiences?
I'm sorry. What?
How are they how are they balancing those two experiences between the president's speech criticizing Russia and now the threat, the perception that there was collusion with Russia?
You know, that's a very good question. You know, the idea is, you know, why did, if Putin did support him, if he did want Trump in there, and now Trump is seen as attacking Russia. I mean, at the time of the campaign, of course, he was much less critical of Russia. In fact, he was saying we should work more closely with Russia and that Russia shouldn't be regarded as an enemy. And it's only since he's been in office since he's changed his mind. And the I think it can be said that the Russians were extending the help during the campaign. Now, having said all that, at the same time, regardless, what is in Russia's benefit is a weak president, a weak administration.
Mm-hmm. And so, and a weak political system
whoever,
as well.
Whoever is in the White House, if they're weak, if they're preoccupied with lots of problems like this and scandals, then they're not going to be able to devote the time and energy to opposing the expansion of Russian influence elsewhere.
But wait a second. You've got the expansion of Russian influence now in Germany, where Chancellor Merkel is trying to arrange a transfer of oil resources from Russia to Germany. I'm confused here.
Merkel would claim that that is a simple financial transaction, a business transaction. That's what she would say.
It's something.
And they need that gas.
I understand.
You know, it's a lot cheaper. It's a lot cheaper. I know that the United States would like to supply liquefied natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
I think while the Hamburg conference was going on, a tanker appeared at the docks full of gas.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot cheaper to have it piped. And it's a lot more secure to have it piped than it is to have it transported by ship.
You can appreciate I'll use the word confusion that I'm expressing related to the fears of Russia influence in U.S. and then Russian influence in Europe. We're going to get back to that in just a moment. Go ahead.
I agree. There are always contradictions.
There are. One might even use hypocrisy, but there are contradictions in politics. We recognize that. As always, Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Just to remind you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate the difference in difference in time between when this is airing, which is almost 11 p.m. Tom's time, and he being in London. So we do pre-record this program to accommodate his schedule and ours as well. Tom, let's move on to some issues, and I want to talk about the topic of Hamburg and the Hamburg riots, since we were just chatting about President Trump's visit to Poland and to Germany and the events there in Germany. I've got a quick question for you. What's the feeling about the outcome of the G20 conference. Was it considered a successful event?
I think what they wanted was Trump to move on climate change, and they wanted him to move on globalization.
I'm
he wouldn't budge.
I'm intrigued by this in light of the fact that there were the 20 major countries in the world. Why the focus just on one, and that being President Trump? Is that still the...
Because it's the only one that's out of step.
Okay. Wait. Hold on. Turkey has announced that they're...
On climate change. Well, definitely on climate change.
Turkey has announced, they announced yesterday, that they're leaving the climate accord. There's question as to the veracity of China's investment in the climate change. They are building more coal factories as we speak, in spite of the fact that they were supposedly closing them down.
That was agreed in Paris Agreement.
Image versus reality. Okay. So that was the number one issue, was climate change and President Trump.
Yes.
Wow. All right. What about other things? What about the economy? And we've got to get to Brexit here in a few moments. What about the economy, the world economy?
Well, the Eurozone is starting to pick up a bit. The British economy is starting to feel the effects of Brexit.
Okay.
It's not shrinking yet, but it's gone from... 3% growth to 0.8% growth. So it's definitely slowing down.
All right.
The Eurozone countries are starting to pick up. I don't think that has anything to do with the G20, though.
Okay, the G20 was specifically focused, do you think, on the climate issue?
I think it was focused on climate and globalization.
Okay.
And there were other issues, obviously, like Syria, and there was a useful agreement on Syria. There was no progress on Ukraine.
What was the
big thing? The touchstone for almost every country is climate change.
Okay.
And the fact that Turkey's pulling out, Turkey doesn't agree with anyone either.
All right, we're going to get back to Turkey.
Yeah, they're really becoming a almost a rogue pariah state.
Yes, but they're important to NATO. They're important to the issue of refugees. We'll get to that. Let's talk about the Hamburg riots. Now that they're over, what's the review of that? We of course, we're recognizing the fact, and I want to thank you for your observations related to the G20 and all the political intrigue that was involved with many of the attendees. But the riots were well covered here in the States. What was the opinion, again, of the European community, the world community, let's use that, related to those riots? And what impact has that had on Chancellor Merkel and the German community?
Well, there were 20,000 police on duty, 500 were injured, and only 187 arrests.
Hmm.
Now, I think that what's come out of it is a call from a number of German politicians. Two things. One is to create a database of left-wing extremists, and that database would be used whenever there's going to be a summit meeting of any kind in Germany to make certain that the people on the database stay at home.
Okay, you said something.
Allowed to attend any of these meetings.
Okay, you said something very, very important. Let me interrupt you. You said something very important. You distinguish this as left-wing extremists. What about right-wing extremists? Were there any involved?
Well, exactly. That they say is part of the problem. That over the years, well, in the past, in the 70s and 80s, you had organizations such as the Red Faction Army, which were quite left-wing. And the German intelligence services focused on them. But in recent years, they've taken their eye off the left-wing ball and are focusing instead on the neo-Nazis and the Islamists. And so basically, they're being criticized, the police and by extension the government are being criticized for not paying enough attention to left-wing organizations such as a new one called the Black Bloc.
Hmm. Interesting. All right, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. Very quickly, I want to move on to issues of with Great Britain and the United Kingdom. But has Chancellor Merkel had any negative impact as a result of the riots in Hamburg? Yes or no?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes, she has had. She is in coalition with a party called the Christian Social Union. Mm-hmm. They are the Bavarian equivalent of her party, which is the Christian Democratic Union Party. And they have been very critical. They're quite they're a little bit more right wing than her party.
OK.
And they have been very critical.
All right. I want to talk about one other issue. Well, demonstrations in Turkey. Let's touch on that very quickly since we're talking about demonstrations. Then I want to move to the UK. What is the issue there in Turkey? And, with President Erdogan?
Well, President Erdogan has locked up, I think, 110,000 people. He's supposed to be the world's biggest jailer of journalists. Mm. He's becoming more and more authoritarian.
So what will the demonstrations prove?
The leader of the opposition has organized a march, and that march marched all the way, I think it was like 287 miles. It marched from the capital, which is Ankara, to Istanbul.
Mm-hmm.
And they marched about 20 miles a day. The leader of the opposition, by the way, is about 70 years old, and he was right at the front of it.
Wow.
And when they got to Istanbul, they had several hundred thousand people in the march.
Okay. So is there any chance for a regime change in Turkey?
No.
Yes or no? Okay.
I don't think so.
All right.
Erdogan has controlled the police. He has controlled the courts. He has controlled the media. He has called these people supporters of terrorism and coup plotters, which means, they could be the next ones to be arrested.
All right. I want to move on to other issues very quickly. We've got to come into a break. Let's talk first about Brexit and the UK. I read with interest over the past couple of days that the European Court is telling the UK that they cannot treat the Euro citizens any differently than they treat regular British citizens in the confines of the United Kingdom. That's a shocking disclosure. How is that being received in Great Britain and particularly by the Prime Minister?
It's not the European Court saying that.
Okay.
Okay.
It is.
This is a negotiation.
Okay.
And what it is, the latest thing is that the European Parliament, which has to approve any agreement,
okay,
has said that they will not approve any agreement which does not extend the protection of the European Court to EU nationals in the UK.
Wow.
And the reason they're saying that, Lockwood, is because that is the existing situation. And the principle was in these negotiations right at the start was that the EU nationals living in the UK and British nationals living in the EU, their circumstances would not change, that they would have all the same rights that they had before the Brexit vote.
Interesting.
Denying them access, argues the European Parliament and European Commission, denying them access to the European Court of Justice would be a significant change in circumstances. From the British point of view, which is probably what you're saying, is how can Britain take back control of its laws if it allows a foreign court to have jurisdiction over people living in its country, 3 million people.
Exactly.
Okay. And that is a counter argument. And for that reason, the British are standing firm, but so is the EU. It is the first hurdle.
I understand.
That they've come to. Very first, and they can't get over it.
Okay,
I don't know how they're going to solve the rest of it.
Okay, here's a quick question for you. I'm going to move on to Grenfell Towers very quickly here. But how was that being received by the general population in Great Britain? Is it being received? Are they a little concerned by this? Yes or no?
Well, it depends on what side of the Brexit debate you're on.
All right. Okay. So we still have
again.
That
it's a division in society.
Okay. Let me move on very
quickly.
Every
issue seems to divide it.
All right. Let me move on to another issue very quickly. We've got to go to a break. the Grenfell Tower inquiry, and of course, we're talking about the tower that burned, and what's the outcome of this? Where are we in this inquiry? We've got about a minute to go.
Okay, the Grenfell Tower was with public housing.
Right.
So most of the people were unemployed, or they were immigrants, or something like that. They were what you might call working class.
Mm-hmm.
And they've appointed a very upper-crust judge to head up the inquiry. And they're saying they don't want him because he cannot empathize. I never can pronounce that word.
Empathize.
He's not from the same social class that they are.
Right.
And so therefore he cannot understand their problems and will be biased against them in favor of the conservative controlled council, which was responsible for the safety of the building.
Is that story still resonating in Great Britain? Is that because there's been so much going on since? Okay.
Yes, it is still resonating. And this issue of who's going to head up the inquiry, I mean, personally, I think that you cannot have the judge. It should not be a determining factor what his social background is.
He
should be fair and impartial, and basically chosen on that basis, regardless of his social background.
Who makes the decision on who will be judging this?
It would be the government.
Okay, Parliament?
It would be Theresa May's government.
Okay.
Presumably Theresa May.
Okay. All right. I was just wondering about that. As we wrap it up, and I've got to go to a break, how is Theresa May's, what's her popularity image? How is that standing up with all this taking place over the past couple of weeks? Negative. Negative?
Right down towards the bottom.
Wow.
She's seen as a ineffective lame duck prime minister.
LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Our guest Tom Arms with us this afternoon here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. The British like to think they invented the law. It's true that thanks to empire and successful European wars, British law is the foundation of many of the world's legal systems. It is certainly the cornerstone of the American judicial system and the old imperial countries. British lawyers rewrote the law books in Germany following World War II and contributed heavily to the European Court of Justice, with which they are currently having so many problems. Actually, the principle that the rule of law must underwrite civilized societies dates back to at least ancient Egypt. It is there where we find the first allegorical representation of the goddess Justice holding the scales in which the rights and wrongs of a case are impartially weighed. The Egyptians called her Anubis. The Greeks called her Dike and added the sword to represent the finality of legal decisions. The Romans provided the moniker Justitia, or Justice, and the Swiss added the blindfold in the 16th century. But the British, and by association the United States, have for centuries been the keenest exponents of what is generally termed the rule of law. They have argued that the laws built on centuries of parliamentary debate, court precedents, seasoned with a bucketful of common sense, and administered by judges trained for their impartiality, must always be above the variable winds of politics. Representative politics represent the majority view. The law in the form of an independent judiciary protects not only the majority, but also the minority, so that all of society is protected. Hence the blindfold and scales. All this makes it surprising that Britain and America appear to be subtly undermining the rule of law. And following the examples of authoritarian countries such as Russia and China in trying to subjugate the law to the political will. The latest manifestation is the aftermath of the horrific Grenfell Tower fire. The current indications are that the fire was the result of local government and contractors saving pennies at the expense of safety. Theresa May has ordered an inquiry and appointed the respected upper-crust Cambridge-educated judge Sir Martin Moore-Bick to head it. But Grenfell Tower was public housing. Its residents were from the poorest sections of society, who have for years felt exploited by establishment figures such as Sir Martin. They don't want him. Their acute dislike was echoed by local Labour MP Emma Code, who demanded his replacement and said, "I don't understand how anybody like that can have any empathy for what those people have been through." So, Why is Sir Martin the right person for the job? Because he is trained to be impartial and make decisions based on facts rather than empathy and social connections. Justice is blind. The other side of the British class divide is just as guilty of bending the law to their political position, as demonstrated by the legal battles that preceded the invoking of Article 50 of the EU Lisbon Treaty, which was needed to start the formal Brexit process. The Conservative government claimed that the referendum result overruled the sovereignty of Parliament. Not so, said the High Court, and ruled that the Brexit process could not start until after debate and the vote in Parliament. The right-wing anti-EU tabloid The Daily Mail branded the judges enemies of the people. The government, which is sworn to uphold the law, remained silent for over a day before reluctantly defending the need for an impartial and independent judiciary. Even then, it spent millions appealing the decision to the Supreme Court, where it lost. The journalist who wrote the Daily Mail headline, James Slack, became Theresa May's official spokesperson. Donald Trump is not much better. He undermined the rule of law when he attacked the so-called federal judges blocking the Muslim travel ban. He did the same when he abruptly sacked 46 Obama-era federal prosecutors, and again when he dismissed FBI Director James Comey for being too dogged in his investigation of the Russian hacking scandal. It is often said that the law is an ass. Personally, I'd rather be judged by an ass than a political hack.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, tomorrow's news today, and of course, Look Ahead Radio, heard every Friday afternoon here on the talk station and radio stations around the world. Tom, let's move on to several quick items here. We were chatting a few months ago about Poland. Let's talk about Hungary and the Hungarian government's attack on George Soros. Why and what's happening there?
Okay, they hate George Soros.
Why?
And they're spending $21 million on an anti-Soros poster campaign with anti-Semitic graffiti scrawled across the poster because he has Jewish roots.
Wow.
And the reason is because Soros is very much in favor of open borders.
Okay. And Hungary
is very much in favor of immigration, everything else.
And Hungary is
touchstone for the government, the Hungarian government of Viktor Orban.
And Hungary
are really fighting against taking any refugees from anywhere at any time.
And Hungary is one of the points of refugee entry, is it not?
No, it is not. They have managed to take so far from the millions that have, or the over a million that have come from Syria. So far, they've taken 550, and I think they just sort of squeezed under the wire, literally.
Okay, really?
They patrol the border with dogs.
Okay, let me ask you a question here, because we'll move on to several other items, but let's talk about the refugees. In light of the fact that, well, Mosul has been repatriated, and the possibility of Raqqa soon being repatriated, what is the future of the refugees there in Europe? Are they showing any interest in returning to Syria, or are they interested in staying primarily in Europe?
We haven't had much reporting on that. But I think you have to remember that these are not economic refugees. They did not come to Europe to seek a better life. They came to Europe to stay alive. They didn't want to go. They were forced to go.
That begs the question.
And because of that, probably a greater proportion will want to go back.
That begs the question that we don't know at this point. All right, it'll be interesting. Just want to remind you of that comment a few moments in the future. Tom Arms, of course, of LookAheadNews.com. Tom, we've got two other items I want to touch on. I want to get to the Saudi king, but very quickly, share with us the dispute between Costa Rica and Nicaragua.
Yeah, it's the San Juan River, which is the border between them. Mm-hmm. And the San Juan River is now they're both disputing the navigation rights or ownership of the San Juan River. And the reason is it could be an alternative route for a second canal across Central America.
Okay, so this is something that may have long-term economic impact. Very quickly, and because I do want to move on to Saudis, is this a situation that could become heated, or is this just a typical political dispute?
I don't think it could become heated. It's now before the International Court of Justice.
Okay. All right. That'll be interesting to see how that turns out. Let's talk about the Saudi king demanding the sacking of a columnist. For what reason?
Because he praised him too much.
The columnist praised the Saudi king too much?
He praised the Saudi king too much. Saudi King Salman bin Abdulaziz Al Saud, aged 81, has demanded the sacking of columnist Ramadan Al Aziz from the Okaz newspaper for praising him too much. And what he did was, he basically equated him with God or Allah.
Oh, okay. That, now,
and wait. You can't do that. It's against the law in Saudi Arabia. You know, God is God.
Right, right.
There are actually 99 different Arabic names for God.
Wow.
And you can't use them. You can't use them or descriptions of God, if you like. And you can't use them to describe anyone, any of the characteristics of God to anyone except Allah. And the columnist referred to the king as Halim, which means forbearing, and Sadib al-Ikab, which means strong in punishment.
Okay.
The king said, that is a road we must not go down.
Lookaheadnews.com. And of course, Look Ahead Radio, lookaheadnews.com. Tomorrow's news today. Tom, as we wrap it up, what's ahead for the week? Just very quickly.
Well, I think there's going to be a lot more on Brexit.
Okay.
It's going to be a lot more. There's a lot more to come out. That's an important, long-running story. Also, the Israeli prime minister is going to Hungary, and he's also anti-Soros, even though they have been putting up anti-Jewish posters all around Budapest.
All right, we will be paying close attention to this at lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.